Okay. Maitreya Vacha. Maitreya said. Vinanjav. Abusing. Evam. Thus. Saha. He. Daksha. Girisham. Shiva. Pratipam. Without any hostility. Avastitam. Remaining. Dakshaha. Daksha. Atta. Now. Apaha. Water. Upasprasha. Washing hands and mouth. Krudaha. Angry. Shaptum. To curse. But Chakrame began to. Translation, the sage Maitreya continued. Thus Daksha, seeing Lord Shiva sitting as if against him, washed his hands and mouth and cursed him in the following words. So you can repeat. The sage Maitreya continued.
Thus Daksha, seeing Lord
Shiva, sitting as if against him,
washed his hands and mouth,
and cursed him in the following words.
So there's no purport to this text, so we'll read the next text with its translation and purport.
Text 18. Ayam tu deva yajjanna indro pendradi birvapaha sahabhagam nalabhattang devar deva ganadamaha.
The demigods are eligible to share in the oblations of sacrifice. But Lord Shiva, who is the lowest of all the demigods, should not have a share. So purport by his divine grace, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Because of this curse, Shiva was deprived of his share in the oblations of Vedic sacrifices. It was due to the curse of Daksha, Sri Vishwanath Chakravarti comments in this connection, that Lord Shiva was saved from the calamity of taking part with other demigods, who are all materialistic. Lord Shiva is the greatest devotee of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and it is not fitting for him to eat or sit with materialistic persons like the demigods. Thus, the curse of Daksha was indirectly a blessing, for Shiva would not have to eat or sit with other demigods who are too materialistic. There is a practical example set for us by Gaura Kishora Das Babaji Maharaj, who used to sit on the side of a latrine to chant Hare Krishna. Many materialistic persons used to come and bother him and disturb his daily routine of chanting. So to avoid their company, he used to sit by the side of a latrine, where materialistic persons would not go because of the filth and the obnoxious smell. However, Gaura Kishora Das Babaji Maharaj was so great that he was accepted as the spiritual master of such a great personality as His Divine Grace, Om Vishnupad, Sri Srimad Bhakti Saranta Saraswati Goswami Maharaj. The conclusion is that Lord Shiva behaved in his own way to avoid materialistic persons who might disturb him in his prosecution of devotional service. Okay? So, Om Gana, Tamarandasha, Gananjana, Shlakaya, Chakshur, and Meditam, Yena Tasmai, Shri Gurave, Namaha. So, there are several things going on here, of course. First thing in the first verse is that Daksha is projecting his own mentality upon Lord Shiva. In other words, he thinks he knows why Lord Shiva is acting the way he is acting. And this is a big problem. You know, we generally do that. It's like we were talking about children last night, that sometimes, like, children do things that stimulate, let's say, our anger or get us disturbed. Stimulate. So, anyway, so what happens is we think the children are doing that. Why?
to aggravate us. But actually, that's not a fact. It's not that the children plan it out every day. You know, they sit in their little rooms every day. Let's plan out how we can drive our mother crazy, right? And they come up with a whole strategic plan. You know, vision statement. The vision is to drive mother crazy or father crazy. And then first you have a vision, then you have a strategic mission statement. We'll do this by doing things that just drive her crazy. And then you have specific things you do during the day to accomplish that. Now, actually, what the children are doing when they stimulate the parents' anger is they're simply trying to fulfill their own needs. That's all. You know, whether they have a need for fun. And sometimes it's a lot of fun to see your mother, like, upset. It is a lot of fun. I derived a lot of pleasure from that. It's one of the most fun things I do. And sometimes, you know, I do things to, even this day, to aggravate mother figures because it's fun. Anyway, so there's a need for, isn't it? It's so much fun. So they have a need for fun. It's not that they're trying to make someone angry. They're not evil in intention, but they're just trying to have fun. Either have fun or establish their autonomy, right? Because up to the age of about two, the children pretty much identify themselves with the parents, right? And so after a while, it's a healthy thing, you know. Hey, I'm a separate individual. You know, I got to make some choices in life. So therefore, they become what we call oppositional. Like to everything we say, they say no. Just like I was at a friend's house recently in Philadelphia, Sugar's house, and he has one nice little boy who's about a year and a half, 2 years old. And I was having some interesting exchanges with him. He was coming up to me and says, "No way." You know, just not even relationship to anything, you know. I wasn't even asking him to do anything. There was no, like, external relationship. He would just come up and say, "No way." And I would just and I would just say, "Yes." "Yes way." And he said, "No way." And so that we'd go on for half an hour back and forth. "Yes, no way. Yes, no way." Back and forth, back and forth. And it was a lot of fun for me, actually. And he was having a lot of fun, too. And he was simply expressing his need to be himself, that's all. It's not that he was oppositional. We can just, like, give him the label. This little kid is really oppositional. And let me teach him a lesson. You know, I'm the guru, or I'm the whatever I am. Older person, or I'm higher on the hierarchy than you. And so, you know, if I hear that words come from your mouth again, I'm going to make it so you can't sit for a week. My mother used to do that. And that was fun, too, for me. Because then it was involved running and trying to escape from her. It was just like so much fun I had when I was a kid. So anyway, so even the punishments the parents give sometimes for the kid fulfills their need for fun. You understand? Especially if the parents can't catch the kid. Then it's even more fun. They see the mother getting frustrated. You know, like even Krishna did that with Mother Yashoda. He was running away. He broke the butter pot. And Mother Yashoda was running after him with a stick, and she couldn't catch him. And then she was trying to tie him up after Krishna allowed her to catch him. But then after she caught him, she was trying to tie him up with a rope, and it was always like 2 inches too short, and Krishna was just laughing and having a good old time, you know, just aggravating his mother. This is fun. So anyway, so the point is this child who I was having some exchange with was having a lot of fun, and he was also establishing his own, you know, his own self, his independence. And he was also... that was another interesting thing. He also wanted love. Because I asked these parents, I said, "Look, what's the difference between this and your other child?" They have two children, two boys. I said, did your older boy do this? And they said, no. No, the older boy was just a gem. Because there's this understanding that if a kid keeps his mouth quiet, he's a gem. Anyway, so he was just like wonderful. And this kid is so oppositional. So I was analyzing. So what did you do different? I mean, of course, we can say they have different genes. They're a different soul. That's true. Like that. And I said, did you send the older kid to daycare? And he said, no. And the younger kid? Yes. The young kid's been in daycare since like three months old or something like that, because the mother has to work. I mean, I'm not criticizing. And because when the child comes home, the child, needs the attention of the parents. The child hasn't had that basic attention that the older child had. So in other words, there were needs being expressed by the child. All sorts of different interesting needs. There was a need for fun. There was a need for autonomy. There was a need for, attention or affection from the parents. And so that's what the child was doing. That was his intention. It was not that he wasn't just a mean SOB. I don't want to explain what that means. But he wasn't he just wasn't a mean brat. We always give the children names, too. That's people people who do things that, just stimulate different emotions in us. We give names like, oh, he's just a bratty child. Or if a child keeps his mouth shut, he's a good child. So if the child is sleeping, he's really good. Just like I gave that example in the airport, there was a child who was just like so quiet and obedient to the parents, and the people asked the mother, what do you do? And the mother said, I have this philosophy of training children. It's called a smacker or a cracker. If the child does something I don't like, I just smack it. And if the child does something I like, I give it a cracker. And I said, and that sounds pretty much like you train animals, like dogs. I remember when I was young, I don't want to discuss this, but anyway, we had a dog and had to be not toilet trained. You don't toilet train it, house trained, whatever it's called. A dog, so we'll go to the bathroom outside, right? Obviously, you don't want the dog going to the bathroom in the living room. It's kind of messy. You don't want the dog lifting this leg on it. Your best couch. my poor mother paid like several thousand dollars for it. So the idea was that when the dog got ready to lift its leg, you have these newspaper, roll up newspaper, and you smack it. And then when it learns to go outside through the doggy door, because the houses now have doggy doors, the dog has his own key and lock and everything. Learns how to, put it in his little paw, press the combination or something like that. So when the dog does that, then you just give him a little biscuit, or a dog bone or something like that. So it's good. We should train up people like that too, especially in the temple. If someone joins the Hare Krishna movement and they become a... Oh yeah, I was just speaking to someone last night who moved in a temple, and they were actually being dealt with like that, even though they're 23, 25 years old or something like that. That, the temple commander is just like, and they're using more sophisticated like punishments than, obviously they're not taking rolled up newspaper and smacking them with it. I don't think so. More sophisticated punishments for human beings are called guilt trips. In other words, as they were walking out the temple because they couldn't stand it anymore, and there people were coming out of the temple and saying, you're a rascal, you're fallen, you become a demon or something like that. How can you do this? You're offending. So we hit human beings, at least adult human beings, in a more sophisticated fashion, isn't it? There's a different way to hit the people without... Actually, it's more painful. Like sharp words are more painful than a newspaper or than a bullwhip. When I was young, I had a bullwhip too. But anyway, Anyway, I was pretty rascally. I used it on my parents. Then they took it away from me. But anyway, so I can definitely relate to children because I had so much fun when I was young. Anyway, so getting back to the point is that Lord Shiva here, I mean this verse, we're not talking about those things. Lord Shiva had his own psychology and he was doing things for his own purposes, and Daksha was thinking he was doing things for different purposes. Daksha was thinking he's just acting to offend me. But actually he was just acting to meditate on Krishna. That's why it's important in interacting with people to try to understand why they're doing what they're doing, rather than just thinking, you know, I understand you, you rascal, you're just doing it to make me upset, or you're doing it to be a rascal. And that way we can develop empathy. And there's different ways of understanding that, you know, why people are doing what they're doing. One is if we can ask them. That's an easy way. You said, when I walked in the room and you just kept your eyes closed, that's an objective statement, right? What were you thinking? Or what were you feeling? Why were you doing that? And they could say, well, I was didn't get enough rest last night. I had a need for sleep, you know. When you were snoring during Bhagavatam class, what need were you trying to fulfill? You know, I was fulfilling my need for sleep. What's the problem, Maharaj? When your stomach was growling, what need was it? I was hungry. Anyway, so some objective statements. You know, so some objective statements. So we should actually be well-balanced enough to approach people and ask people like that. And of course, that means we have to be balanced enough internally ourselves so we're not dealing with all these, like, emotions that are just, like, disturbing us. You know, so in other words, to become balanced, let's say we walk into a room, and I see someone just sitting there with his eyes closed and not offering obeisances to me like I think they should. Then, first of all, I have to just do some internal stuff and just say, when I walked in the room, that person didn't offer obeisances, and I'm thinking they're a demon because of that, because I have a need for appreciation or whatever, you know, a need for anything, a need for exercise, obeisances. So anyway, so I need to see people healthy, you know. You know, doing push-ups, you know. This doesn't work if you happen to be like a sergeant in the army training people up, you know. Isn't it? Soldiers do push-ups. Anyway, so you can analyze things like that. So because of my need, I became aggravated at that person. Or the need to see someone observe the Vedic system, you know. That's also another need. You know, see someone do something dharma. And so then you go to the person and you say, my dear so-and-so, when you didn't offer obeisances or when you kept your eyes closed and didn't say anything to me, you know, what were you thinking? Why'd you do that? Anyway, and then they can explain that. All right, so that's one way of doing it. And Dr. Sir certainly should have done that with Lord Shiva. He should, instead of just, you know, just like cursing and everything, he could have just gone up to Lord Shiva and said, my dear Lord Shiva, you know, I saw you sitting there and with your eyes closed and everything like that. Why? And Lord Shiva could explain, you know, I was in so much ecstasy meditating on the Supreme Personality of God. And Daksha would have just put his arm around him and said, wow, I was thinking some really bad things about you, but now I realize, you know, I was completely off. Please forgive me. And the whole episode would have ended there, and everybody would have been very happy, and this whole part of the Bhagavatam could have been eliminated. Anyway, so so we would have ended up with a lot less to study. So, of course, you know, this particular section of the Bhagavatam has a lesson for us. So that's one lesson we can learn. So So that's actually what Dacha should have done, rather than just like projecting his own mentality, because Lord Shiva was meditating on Krishna. Anyway, so Dacha goes ahead, curses Lord Shiva, and this curse turns out to be a benediction for Lord Shiva. And that's the interesting thing. Not only is the curse a benediction, but it's really interesting. In the Sanskrit here, Devagana Adamaha means, as Prabhupada translates, the lowest of all the demigods, but it also can mean, in Sanskrit, in relationship to him, all the demigods are lower than him. So actually, there's two ways to understand this. Devagana Adama, the demigods are all lower than him, or he's the lowest of the demigods. So even Daksha here, the goddess of learning actually does that quite interestingly in many cases. When people are blaspheming Krishna or blaspheming Krishna's devotees, they actually are praising them indirectly, if you analyze the Sanskrit in a different way. So anyway, so he did this. He just cursed Lord Shiva. And this curse was something that actually helped Lord Shiva in his spiritual life. As Srila Prabhupada mentions here in this purport, quoting from Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. And we see instances of this where devotees are cursed, and they're really happy to be cursed, actually because they see it in different ways. One way they see it is they think that it's a token reaction for my past sinful activities. Tatenu kampam sushumikshmana bunjanabhatma krutam vipakam ridbhag vapur vir vidadam namaste jiveta yo mukti padesa dayabhag. They actually think this is a token reaction for my past activities, and I'm just getting this token reaction, and I deserve it, and it's going to help me in my devotional service, and I should just go on to test. I should go on offering obeisances to Krishna with my body, mind, and words in spite of that. That's a test. You know, things happen, and, you know, we can react in such a way that we just, like, give up Krishna consciousness. Oh, yes, those devotees, I walked into the temple and all they wanted was my money, therefore I'm giving up Krishna consciousness. Right? We can react like that. Or we can say, well, the devotees walked in the temple and they just asked for my money. That's their problem, not mine. And I'm going to go on chanting Hare Krishna like that. What's that? Chintamani, you can help her if you want.
I don't understand what she's asking.
Well, then why don't you go in the other room and ask her? So, that's a practical strategy. Than having me translate from Hindi into English. So, anyway, so a devotee just goes on serving Krishna. And there will be many tests like that, too. I mean, things are going to happen that you can't believe. You won't believe it, you know, that devotees may not treat you in the right way, or the material situation may not be ideal, you know, the weather may not be ideal, or the body may not be ideal, may not, will not. Be ideal, you know. None of our bodies are ideal bodies, you know. We get migraine headaches. It's like, what is that old Excedrin commercial on TV where there's three compartments in the head, one is hitting and the other one is a fire or something like that. I forget that whole advertisement. Or there may be, anyway, or so many things may happen with the body. It's really incredible. This body has so many nice ways to deal with us. Or our blood sugar may be down, or we may have sad. There may not be enough sunshine in the winter. You know? So we're having to buy 10 sun lamps, you know, to put on ourselves in our room. So, I mean, so many things are there. But we just go on serving Krishna, just chanting Hare Krishna, in spite of that. So that's the first point. The second point is that whatever does happen is actually meant for our benefit. you know, whatever situation we're in, that we have no control over. If you have some control over, don't blame Krishna for it. Like if you fall asleep while you're driving your car because you didn't get enough sleep the last night, and you get in an accident, don't blame Krishna. That's your foolishness. But things you have, there's a lot of things we have no control over. Most things we have no control over. So therefore you just understand, you know, Krishna sent it for my benefit, you know, it's to teach me something. And you should change your behavior in such a way. So anyway, so there's other instances of devotees getting cursed like this. Narada Muni is a typical example, prime example. Narada Muni was also cursed by Daksha. And Daksha is quite expert at cursing other living entities, especially devotees. You know, and actually the way to curse is you purify your hands and you take some water and you throw it at someone. And another way is you break your Brahman thread. I remember in the early days of the movement, we would practice breaking Brahman threads, you know. There's only one time I cursed someone. It was in Venezuela. And this guy actually just tried to oppose the movement. It wasn't a question of a personal thing. He tried to oppose the movement, wanted to go to the press and just like get me thrown out of the country and everything like that. So I just got so angry and just broke my Brahman thread and cursed him. And I don't know what happened to him afterwards, but everything was all right after that. Yeah, he came to the temple so angry, like ready to destroy the temple, so I just cursed him. So that was the only time I ever did that, and he cursed anyone my whole time in the Krishna conscious movement. I had to replace my Brahman thread. So anyway, so Daksha was quite expert, so he also cursed Narada Muni, and Narada Muni, what Narada Muni did in this particular case that we're mentioning, is Narada Muni told two groups of his sons, the Hariyashavas and the Savalashas, to take sannyas. And, you know, for a parent, that's really difficult dealing with a kid who takes sannyas because, you know, the parents, they want to enjoy grandchildren, isn't it? I mean, that's, you know, what's the sense of having children unless your children can have children? Unless your children can have children who 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 can have children. So, it's like I know a lot of people, a lot of retired devotees, they spend their lives going from one grandchild to another. So, it's all right. At least the grandchildren are devotees. But, so anyway, Daksha, he was very expert in this, and he wanted to have grandchildren. So he had, that was his duty also in relationship to Krishna. He was a Prajapati. So he had one group of sons, you know, 10,000 sons. Poor wife. It's like nowadays they complain like a lady has octuplets. So you imagine like 10,000 uplets or something. I don't know how you would say that in English, you know. 10,000 at once, you know, what a litter. That's more, I guess fish have that many practically when they lay eggs, you know. Fish or frogs, you know. They lay frog eggs. They have a lot of little tadpoles. So anyway, so he had that, and Narada Muni convinced him to take sannyas. Because Narada Muni said, you know, who's your real father? You know, he's just your material father. This is the way we used to preach in the Krishna conscious movement. When we got someone to join, and their parents didn't like, we said, you know, he's not your real father, it's just Maya. Even we preach to children like that sometimes. They couldn't relate to that. When I was a Gurukul teacher in the early days, the children would cry, Mommy, 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 and I said, she's not your mommy. You know, 5-year-old. That was completely insensitive as far as I can see. Your real mother is, you know, Radharani, and your real father is Krishna. You know, forget about these conditioned souls who you think is your mother and father. So anyway, so getting back to the story. So Narada Muni convinced them to take sannyas by telling them, you know, your real father is Krishna, you know, obviously. And, you know, listen to your real father. Don't listen to that gross materialist, basically. He didn't say that in so many words. He told a nice little metaphorical story. You know, anyway, it's a long story. I don't have time to tell it. But anyway, so the boys took sannyas. The first group, second group was only 1,000. Daksha didn't want to risk another 10,000. And so 1,000, and then they took sannyasa, and Daksha got so angry he cursed Narada Muni that he couldn't reside anywhere for more than a few minutes. And Narada Muni thought, this is a great curse, because now I could just travel and preach and help people and not just get entangled in this world. Because when you stay in a particular place, you get entangled, you get attached. Even if you stay under the same tree every night, you begin to think it's your tree. You know, you put your initials on it. This is like a dog, you know, passes urine on a tree, you know, to mark the tree as his tree. And the same way, you know, someone, this is my tree. You can imagine sages in the forest say, stay away from my tree. You go to your tree. This is my tree, you little nonsense sage. There's only room in this tree for one of us. Anyway, so you get attached after a while. So, but traveling and like Narada Muni does, there's no attachment, and then you actually do accomplish something. Also, another thing is you stay in one place for very long, and no man is a hero in his own village, and people get complacent. Oh, just him again. Just that Narada Muni again, you know, just cool at Narada Muni. So, so Narada Muni took that curse as a benediction. And there's other instances of curses too. Lord Chaitanya was also cursed because there was one Brahmin who couldn't get into the kirtan in Srivasangam. And he wanted to get in. And that time they had a doorkeeper. And the doorkeeper wouldn't let anyone in who wasn't a pure devotee. This Brahmin wasn't a pure devotee. So they wouldn't let him in, so he cursed Lord Chaitanya. He said, because I'm not allowed in this house, you're going to be kept out of your house. I curse you to be locked out of your house. And also Lord Chaitanya took sannyas because of that curse. That was Lord Chaitanya's desire, obviously. So you see that actually curses. Prabhupada also says he had a curse too, the same type, to not be able to reside in one place. Prabhupada wanted to transfer that curse to his disciples. But so the curses devotees take as benedictions. Any curse that we have, you know, whether it's a curse by some sage or a curse by the material energy, you know, because we have some adiatmic, adibodhic, adidaivic difficulties, it's always can be taken as a means to bring us closer to Krishna. And some devotees who don't have curses voluntarily do things that would seem to be like detrimental in order just to be detached. Just like Prabhupada gives the example of Gaur Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj, who voluntarily chanted by a latrine. That's a bathroom for those of you who don't know what that means. So the people would stay away from him. Because generally if you're a sage or a holy person, people come to you for all sorts of stupid reasons. You know, please bless me to be successful in business. Please bless me that my son will get his degree and become a doctor. It's like, in Fiji, I see this a lot. It's like there was one boy who wasn't doing so well in medical school, and the parents came up to me crying, and they said, oh, we have not respected you properly. Oh, please forgive us, please forgive us. Bless us that our boy will do well in medical school. He failed his first semester, now we can't get a scholarship. And so I said, all right, I bless you. And they invited me to their home, and they started giving me donations. I said, this is good business, actually. I said, well, this is really nice, you know, cooking like opulently for me, all these different preparations. I said, well, we should make sure that people understand that they need my blessings for everything material. So, anyway, then his son started doing well in medical school. And then they became even happier with me and more devotional. So this is going on. Anyway, I don't know if it has any connection. I'm not saying that. But the point is that people do come for all sorts of reasons. And we had someone come here a few times. People come to bless their cars, their new Mercedes or something. You know, we brought it. And I said, thank you. They say, we've come to offer it to Krishna. And I said, wow, thank you. And then I realized that, you know, 10 minutes later, they were going to drive off with their car. even they offered to Krishna. And of course, we told that example of sometime we did a fire sacrifice. People put gold in the fire sacrifice to offer it to Krishna. And I said, thank you for the donation. You know, it was all these 1 ounce gold coins. There were like 10 1 ounce gold coins in the sacrifice. I was thinking, wow, I got it made. And that was before gold was so expensive. It was only $500 at that point per ounce, but that's a lot of money. I said, this is great. I should do these sacrifices anyway. This happened in Mexico. And I said, thank you. And they said, no, we were just purifying the gold. So anyway, so people approach saintly people for all sorts of like ulterior purposes. So sometimes you just want to chant Hare Krishna and turn off your phone. That's one of the reasons why I keep my phone off all the time. Because people call for so many reasons, you know, Maharaj, you know, I got a stomach ache. Bless me that the stomach ache will be over. Maharaj, this person yelled at me the other day. Bless me that this person will die. Anyway, not really, they don't say that. They don't, I've never gotten that one yet. But anyway, so, but it's just so many things. So I just say, turn off that stupid phone, because that, when the phone was on all the time, it was, there's no time for anything. It's all day long. And then basically, I was so much time on the phone, I was developing a callus on my shoulder the doctor had to surgically remove. Remember that? Because he kept the phone like that. Developing a crooked neck, you know, I had to go to the chiropractor. Straight, you know, do an adjustment, you know. What you been doing with your neck and your shoulder? Anyway, so therefore sometimes it's better to voluntarily, you know, instead before someone curses you, voluntarily do something to give yourself more time for chanting and attention to spiritual life. So not that we should wait for a curse. we can curse ourselves sometimes. So that we'll have more time. Okay. On that note, all glories to His Divine Grace. Śrīla Prabhupāda, Śrīla Prabhupāda, Śrīla Prabhupāda.